evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net.
KC2VRY signing on.
Do that in a minute. No problem. Hang on one second, Jim. Alrighty. So, TechNet is run a little differently than some of the other Baronets. The purpose of the net is to have a discussion about anything about amateur radio, electronics, telecommunications, computers, things in our society that depend on them, and if I feel a little winded, because I am, I'm a little under the weather tonight, and I kind of trotted up the stairs, so forgive me. In any case, the way we check into the net is a little different, again, than we do on other nets. We'll do it by call sign group, and then we'll ask you whether or not you have a question, or you should check in with your call sign, your name, whether or not you have a question, a comment, both, or none of the above. Even if you don't have a question or a comment for the net, we encourage you to check in, because your presence adds, shall we say, input to what we might want to talk about. People know about you, and they might want to bring up something that you hadn't thought of that you might benefit from. We all have friends in so many words. Anyway, so let's get to it. Station, first of all, is there any emergency or parade traffic? Please call K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo. Excellent. Okay. Stations whose call signs begin with the letter Alpha, please call K2BAR. When you call sign, your name. Whether or not you have a question or comment, both or none of the above, please call K2BAR.
2BAR, this is K2AMI. I just checked, just turning on the radio. Did you call K2AMI yet?
Oh, we're on the alphas yet. But we'll do kilos. Good evening, Tony. Kilo 2 stations. So, Tony, what is, what do you call it? Do you have a question or comment for the net?
I have a question and maybe a comment.
Excellent. Excellent. Question and a comment. That's awesome. Alrighty. Any other Kilo 2s?
This is Kilo Oscar, Jim.
Good evening, Jim. K2ZO. Question or comment?
This time.
Alrighty. You're over deviating a bit. For some reason. Don't know why. You're popping the pass band. I haven't heard that from you ever. Anyway, any other Kilo 2s?
Great to DSL. David, no questions or comments yet.
Good evening, David. Alrighty. Let's see. Any other Kilo 2s?
How about WA2?
We'll get there. WA2CAI, I'll take a sidebar for you. Do you have a question or comment for the net, Tom?
Negative, I just wanted to check in. I just turned the radio on, so I didn't know where on the call letter list you were.
Doing kilos, don't worry, I always go back and recap everybody. All right, any other Kilo 2s? Any other kilos?
Kilo Charlie?
KC2VRY, go ahead.
KC2VRY signing on. Only question, going for my general tomorrow, and I'm just looking for moral support.
Awesome. We'll bring that up as a topic. Very good. Any other kilos?
This is K2PYB, Richard. No questions or comments at this time.
Hi, Richard. Called me the other night and I didn't get a chance to call you back. Or did I? Can't remember. Anyway, haven't been feeling well since yesterday. Alrighty. Any other kilos?
KF2ID.
Okay, Ben, I have you. Do you have anything that you want, a question or comment for the net?
Yeah, I have a sort of comment.
Then I'll give you a sort of comment time. A little bit. Who was the station who just doubled with Ben? Okay. There's no audio on that transmission. Okay. Any other kilos?
K2OK, Bennett. No questions yet, no comment.
Bennett, very good, good evening. And, let's see, any other kilos? Okay, Whiskies.
W2JEK, done, no comments, no questions.
Okay, Don, just to be, someone double with you, but no question or comment?
Well, just commenting that about the VE session tomorrow night.
So no, we'll get to that. Very good. Any other W's?
No, it's me doubling with Don. WA2CAI.
I got you, Tom, already. Yeah, very good. Any other whiskeys? Any Novembers?
This is NS2K, Jim, and no question at this point.
On my very plain rice here. Brown rice. Good stuff. Tastes great. Very filling. Less disruptive. All right. Any other Novembers? All right. Well, we have a question and four comments, so let's get to it. K2AMI, your question, sir. K2BAR.
This is K2BAR. And I'm trying to thumb through my driver's, my automobile driver's manual when it comes to the car. And I wonder if somebody can answer this from experience, but I would like to know, what is the ampere capability of a cigar lighter float in a car today? And does it differ from an accessory float, which some cars have today? They have a 12-volt accessory float. And this is... This comment is brought about by the fact that although I normally don't operate with cigar lighter float and the 2-meter radio, I think I found a need to do such a thing at the Red Cross exercise you just went through. And what sort of amp should we be limiting ourselves to in a cigar lighter float in a car? Back to that.
Kind of car?
Bucks 20, what kind of car?
Any kind of car, standard cars. I have obviously an older Volvo, but new cars today, is there some sort of standard that limits the current?
Can I answer that, Gordon?
Please.
The cigar lighter outlet is what it is, a cigar lighter output. The other one is called a power point. The other one, I'll bet any amount of money on it that it's hooked up with heavier gauge wire than a cigar lighter outlet. I wouldn't trust that cigar outlet for anything.
Comment.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I check a manual. Newer cars, most of them don't have cigarette lighter adapters. They have, you know, they're the same shape and size as a cigarette lighter adapter or a jack, but rated for much lower, usually 10 amps or less, unless you have an SUV type outlet or vehicle with an outlet that says it's an accessory outlet that may be rated for higher, and you should check your manual for that. So today's cars with a cigarette lighter plug, or I should say a jack, but not a real, doesn't come with a real cigarette lighter, is probably rated 10 amps, but you should check your manual. And I believe old cigarette lighter jacks were rated higher. I thought they were on mostly 20 amp circuits. But then again, I don't know for sure. Back to next.
K2BAR, this is KC2BYZ.
Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, I went over this when I got my new vehicle, and I noticed it had two accessory outlets and a cigarette lighter in there. And I went over it with the people in the maintenance department and the dealership for that department. And in every case, they said, do not put one of your amateur radios onto those accessories, because the wiring is not designed to take it, and your radio, other than maybe a handy talk that's only pulling about 5 watts, and it's slow charging. as you use it. If you're like me that has an FT90R, let me just let it drop. What I do is the FT90 fits perfectly into some kind of slot that's right there in the center console, and I have a long power lead that goes all the way down to a rechargeable battery with a distribution plug-in, and I operate it that way. It gives me about 8 to 10 hours depending on the usage, but I do not ever plug it into the radio, into the car, or try to recharge the battery that way. It's the battery is strictly standing alone at that point. And like I said, the dealership and the maintenance people at the Dodge dealership where I bought my vehicle, all said that that wiring is not there for any kind of high amperage. And our radios pull more than 10 amps when they transmit, with possibly the exception of Handy Talks. I've operated my Handy Talks safely on it for quite some time, but I never put my FT90 or even my 817, which is just an overgrown walkie-talkie, onto those accessories because of the. You know, the wiring's just not designed for it. It'll catch the car on fire.
Okay. Very good. Well, a lot of us used to run 10-watt FM rigs, 10-watt output. And that, you know, pulled down to maybe 3 amps. And, you know, we had, you know, alternator wind problems. And this goes back 30 years ago. Now, in a smaller package, you know, we're running 50-watt output and bigger radios. So Richard's advice and the other advice we've received so far kind of is consistent with that. What I did was I had an audio shop run a piece of number 4 from my battery through the firewall to me with, you know, adequate slop, and I did the connections. That's how I did it. You know, I think it cost me $30 to have them running, maybe 40. I think it was 30. And it was, you know, it was a long time ago, but I had them run the wire through, and all done. So anyway, anybody else want to comment?
I'd still like to know what kind of car and the year. I know it's a Volvo, but which car is it and what year?
Oh, let's just pick my newer car then. It's a 2005 XC90.
Thank you.
Now, if I may make a comment, it's my feeling that the accessory plugs that are installed in cars are to operate computers in the back seats or recording devices, consumer electronic devices of a low ampere drawer. And those accessory plugs are not intended to be overloaded. However, as you know, a cigar lighter plug has a nichrome heating element in it. The nichrome heating element gets red hot, the metal gets red hot and glows, and anything that seems to me that is a low resistance nichrome type device draws more current in the cigar lighter plug than the accessory plug would draw. But I haven't seen facts on this or written information in it, and I'm just using my logic, which may be wrong or right. And I want to be sure that I don't destroy the car. Again, what we had in mind in our exercise today was, or for this week, let me drop it for a second. We'd like to install or use a higher watt radio in a Red Cross vehicle that has a cigar lighter plug. The 5-watt handy talkies in some areas, flooded areas that we were in, were not cutting the mustard to get adequate signal out of the low-lying areas. We needed more power, better antenna on the vehicles. Let's see if Gordon can pick it up again. Back to you, Gordon.
B2JEK.
Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, okay, Tony. This is W2JEK.
One comment. The years I've used handy talkies in the car with the cigarette lighter, and of course that doesn't pull a lot because it's a 5-watt rig. Now, you mentioned using handy talkie in the Red Cross vehicle, a radio in a handy talkie in the Red Cross vehicle not making it. Was that using an outside antenna? That might make a big difference. If you're using a handy talkie with an outside antenna, or you're trying to use the rubber duck, it makes a big difference. So, but if you can use a standard FM mobile radio, that, you know, 50-watt radio, usually you can power these things down to 5 watts or 10 watts. That would probably be within the limits of your wiring. One thing about the nichrome heating elements on those cigarette lighters, after they got warm, they popped out. You know, they weren't drawing 10 amperes or whatever they drew for any long period of time. So long enough to get hot and they would pop out. So it wasn't a continuous load on that. So that's a thing. Maybe you can get away using a radio, a 50-watt radio, if you power it down to 5 or 10 watts. Keep that in mind as a possibility. Also using an outside antenna rather than a rubber duck on a handy talkie. Back to that, W2JK.
F2ID.
ID?
Here we have two stations. ID, I'll get you in a minute. Who was the station just checking in?
AJ4WD. Rachel, comment.
Hey, very good. Rachel, go ahead.
A lot of the newer cars have electronics, and the electronics are controlling various sections of the car rather than running wires to the whole car, and they use the DC bus as their network. And so there was someone that made a comment that the service manager and the car dealer said, do not plug your radios in. That's what occurred with my car. They indicated that because I had plugged my HT into the cigarette lighter, that I had RF leak back in there, and that's what blew out my computer. And that was the body control computer, which controlled all the lights, switches, doors, etc. Back to that.
Ben, go ahead.
Well, of course, Rachel's comment is extremely important. I wouldn't use it on any new car if I had the slight suspicion that they were using the wiring for transmitting data of any sort. But aside from that, the you use a transmitter. It's really not continuous duty. You're only really drawing current when you talk, so it isn't quite as bad as it seems. I've used my mobile 35-watt transmitter plugged into the accessory plug, and I've never had any problem with it. I think, but I wouldn't guarantee it, and it's a 10-year-old car, but I think but wouldn't guarantee it, it's fused for 20 amps. I sort of vaguely remember looking back into it, and it was a 20-amp fuse in it. Of course, I was debating whether I could put my 100-watt piece of equipment in there, and I did, and it worked okay. It didn't blow the fuse, that's for sure. And again, keep in mind that the ham radio transmitters are not continuous duty devices. Just don't talk too long if you're worried about it. Let me drop out for a second. And I think it was Jim who mentioned about the cigarette lighters. That's true. Cigarette lighters are not continuous duty devices either. And I strongly suspect, again, I don't know, but that accessory plug is used for a reasonable amount of current because you never know what people plug into it. You know, some people plug in these 110-volt converters into the accessory plug. So now there is a comment I really wanted to make was Tony was having problem putting an antenna on top of a fiberglass body truck, and for the obvious reasons that the magnetic mount antenna would not stick to the fiberglass. I have a suggestion. If you can get a heavy magnet, just put it under the underside in the truck, opposite the magnet in the mag mount, and of course they have to be opposite polarity. So if you can get a fairly good magnet where your poles are separated, you know, horseshoe magnet wouldn't hack it, because it has both poles. So you get a some kind of a bar magnet under the underside of the truck, and that would hold the mag amp antenna up there. And if you just put some aluminum foil, spread it out with some scotch tape under the magnet, and that will give you the ground plane. You could do that inside the truck or outside the truck, and then you have that problem solved. And one other question, excuse me. Another thing, just a question to Tony. Do you still need Red Cross volunteers tomorrow? It's KF2ID. And if so, what time?
Do you want to check that up, Gordon?
Go ahead. Actually, Gordon has stepped away. This is NS2K working now as K2BAR.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. All right. Concerning Red Cross volunteers tomorrow, I don't know. Bob Javits finished up today and was thinking about a different plan for tomorrow, but I don't know what that plan is. And again, Ben has touched upon a second problem that we had, and we'll bring that up momentarily, but we still do not have definitive answers. How many amps can you draw out of a cigarette lighter? Is there a standard? Do all cars correspond to that? And obviously, if it's a newer car, I guess you should check the manual to make sure that there is no data being run on the DC line. So these are factors that we might want to consider. I think I like Richard Bush's suggestion of bringing a rechargeable battery and putting a connector to that to run to your radio, and perhaps place the battery on the floor of the car and be completely isolated from the car's battery system. But, Rich, if you would please tell me what size, what ampere rechargeable battery were you carrying to give you a couple of hours of use. So if I can turn it back to that control and let him turn it over to Richard Bush for an answer. Go ahead, Jim, pick it up.
Richard, go ahead, NS2K.
Yeah, this is KC2PYB. Again, I just wanted to reiterate, the people in the dealership where I bought my vehicle were very adamant that the wiring, not fusing or anything like that, but the wiring to these accessory outlets and the cigarette lighter was not designed for any kind of heavy amperage. The accessories were outlets were designed for like cell phones, laptops, little video games, etc., like that. And as Rachel said, which I'm in 100% agreement with, which they also touched on, the car's power distribution is very low voltage, therefore the wiring is very low voltage, because everything is electronic now, or solid state. So, and that doesn't require a lot of power. Now, the to answer Tony's question directly, the radio that I use in the vehicle, if it's not my Handy Talk, which I could just plug in, it's just a flow charger for the battery, so it really doesn't even know it's there, really. I have an ST90R radio. I fell in love with the minute I saw it. It's very small, and it's also been out of production. that makes a black little carry, a cloth type carry case that has the battery, the recharger, and the power distribution. The power distribution and all in the main the main bag, and the radio fits in there as well. With the transformers off to the side and the microphone in another little pocket off to the side, and the whole thing only weighs 10.2 pounds. So that sits on the floor between the console and the center console, and the wiring goes up to the radio that sits in a large slot that's there in the middle of the console, and I just use the stick on to hold my microphone on with. I can get the information for you because I do have another rechargeable pack that comes from the same company, which has an 8-9 hour battery, and it's just the battery with the charger and the distribution pack. You don't fit a battery in there. I think that'll run for like 10 hours. Again, depending upon the usage that you're using. Over.
Yeah, very good, Richard. I tend to agree. Although we've all done it to some extent. Any of the radios nowadays, especially in the high power mode, draw just way too much current. I don't recall what the manual on my either the CRV or the Toyota. But I know on the newer cars, to Rachel's point, there's so much electronics in there. They don't actually run the data on the DC. They really run it. I think it's all on CAN bus. It's another data. The cat's eyeing my dinner here. there's a data bus that runs around the whole vehicle or major portions of the vehicle per bus. And, of course, there's a lot of chance of, how should I say, the car doing strange things if the data were to get corrupted. Anyway, any more comments on this?
KO2, okay.
Go, Bennett.
Hi, Tony. For your car, your XC90, there is a power connector in the center console between the front and the rear seats. Not your dashboard, but between the front and rear seats, facing the rear seat. And in your manual, it says it's rated for 15 amps. And then you have another power socket, accessory socket, that's by your hatchback when you open the back hatch, and it's on the right side. And that's also rated for 15 amps. You have a 12-volt connector on your dashboard, and that is not rated. And they do give examples there of portable computer, cellular phone. So low power consumption. So that's what it says for your car, at least spec-wise. Back to net, KO2, okay.
15 amps to run a 50-watt radio.
Yeah, well, point taken, Jim. And of course, there is a distinction between the dash and the other remotely mounted power connectors. It's amazing that we don't get into more trouble with it. Of course, Rachel is a distinct exception to that, where she did have a major failure that at least the dealer was attributing to RF. As far as I'm concerned, any computer that's destroyed by that was badly designed, but they're the ones who have to want one or the warranty, and they almost certainly don't agree. Anyway, more comment, Jim, perhaps?
This is K2ZO. I run off the battery through the firewall. Very convenient. There was a connector there to do that with. However, I have run the radio right off my cigar lighter. And if you think about it, the cigar lighter's impedance, if you look at the element, is less than a tenth of an ohm. And that pulls a tremendous amount of current, yet that thing handles it. The reason why? Because mine's got a 25-amp fuse in that thing. However, if I do run the radio up there, I get noise. I get all kinds of alternator whine and stuff like that. So I don't do it. It's not really a good idea. However, in a pinch, you can do it. I don't think there'd be any problem at all in running a 45-watt radio on a newer car in the cigar lighter. Not in the accessory jacks, but actually out of the cigar lighter. Back to that.
Comment.
Go ahead.
Jim, in a lot of new cars, what's in that dashboard is no longer a cigarette lighter. It looks like it, cigarette lighter plug, but it's really just an accessory plug, and there's no more ashtray either. So that receptacle may not be the same kind of power handling that they used to be.
Powered. In my 206 2006 vehicle, it is indeed a cigar lighter, and it's got 25 amp fuse.
Well, that's got a 5 watt output, but I don't know whether they have any specific amperes on this yet. I'll have to read through the book a little more. But they do say radios are allowed. So one thing I do have here with my when I do when I use my this handy talkie in the car. I have the plug has a filter in it to keep out alternator wine from the car, but at the same token it would keep out RF hash from getting back into anything in the DC, I would hope. And that's the intention of the filter, I believe. So that's another thought too, if you're just going in there with the radio or you're going through some kind of a filtration device, it's a thing to consider. Back to that, W2JEK. Yeah, thank you, Don. I suppose it all boils down to read the manual. read the manual. You have a half a chance of not getting into too much trouble, especially when you do blow something up and you take it back and say, it was okay on the manual, that's what it said I could do. Anyway, this cat is something else. He's pretty aggressive tonight. Anyway, any more comment?
KC2VRY, you might be able to go online and get the shop manual for that car and check this wiring schematic for it, see what it says.
Do they usually give wire sizes or just a connection diagram?
I don't know. You're going to have to go to the shop manual and check it out. Give it a shot. What else you got to lose?
F2AD. They generally give fuse sizes. And if you use the fuse sizes, you stay your current at least one half below the rating of the maximum fuse size. I would think you'd get away with it.
Well, I would think even the operator manual will give the fuse sizes and give you some kind of a hint as to how much current you draw. But again, if the antenna that you use obviously has to be a complete antenna. That is, you don't want any RF coming back on the radio and subsequently into the car's wiring where it could cause no end of havoc.
Who am I?
Bad Tony.
Don, way back about 10 minutes ago, asked we were using the rubber ducky or a quarter wave outside antenna. But we were using mag mount quarter wave antennas on the roof of the car where we could stick it to the roof. But a secondary problem appeared with one of the vehicles that Red Cross had, and that they had a fiberglass roof that was not a steel or a magnetic material roof. I don't know that you can easily acquire a magnet that would be adequate to oppose the magnetic antenna. And of course then you would need a counterpoise to make it work correctly. Strangely, the vehicle we
tried to set up on had a fiberglass hood, fiberglass roof, and an aluminum box truck. It wouldn't even stick to the side doors for some reason, but it stuck only to a steel fender, which was minimal in dimensions on the side of the vehicle. And again, we all know these facts that you can't stick magnets to fiberglass things, but when you actually get a practical problem, it's new. You know, you have to solve the new problem. Anyway, we had a lot of fun, and we learned a lot, and came up with some interesting projects for us to improve on. I have seen a pair of vice grips that you could attach a CB antenna to and attach it to the side view mirrors that these trucks have. I thought that might be a solution if you could rig a side view mirror vice grip type antenna to a quarter wave or a half wave ham radio and 2 meter antenna. We might have to think about that as a temporary solution too. Well, back to Nick.
KC2BRY.
Go ahead, BRY.
I got a mobile antenna for my truck, and it has a hook on it with two Allen screws, which I don't even use. I just slipped down on a window and I rolled the window back up, and it works fabulous. And I got that over Community Communications. It wasn't that expensive, and it really increases. I use a handy talk in a truck, and it's unbelievable.
My question is, that's a 5/8 antenna or a quarter wave?
Well, I'm almost certain a guy has both.
The point is that if you are trying to run a quarter wave, you really, really need to be electrically connected or capacitively connected to the body at that point. And otherwise, the antenna is not complete, as Tony points out. If you have a 5/8, okay, the antenna doesn't really need a counterpoise, and you can get away with it. Any comments on that comment?
F-wave antennas are known not to need a counterpoise.
Right, and but the little stubby quarters are definitely a problem, and definitely need a connection in one way or the other to the vehicle at the antenna in order to provide the rest of the antenna, as it were.
That's correct.
Anyway, are we going to beat this up some more? Any more comments?
A comment about our Red Cross operation. Of course, we, not that we're stupid, but you don't have flooding on mountain peaks. You have flooding in valleys and between mountains or between, between large drainage areas that slope to a low level point. So operating a radio from a low level was our problem we didn't realize. We did experience one situation up at Tackinac Lake when I was on a mission. We could get zero transmission from Tackinac Lake, but when we got back on Route 23, which was a much higher elevation, then we had full quieting. And surprisingly, the same thing was true of the cell phones. Our Red Cross driver had a cell phone. He said, "I'll get into the Red Cross cell phone." Well, he could not get a signal. So again, ham radio did work when it got on top of the hill. Turned out that in Wayne, the cell phone towers were not performing the way they should, or they were overloaded. He couldn't get the cell phone to work up on Route 23, which is at a higher elevation. So again, bear in mind that we need transmissions from low levels sometimes. If we had a delayed operation in a valley, we would need to have capabilities to get out of that valley. Back to Nick.
Yeah, I certainly concur. Yeah, obviously, that's where you you can't schedule the problem solve beyond hilltops. Even though the radios would love it. So, and it is troublesome when you're running temporary operations.
big, that's an excellent idea, a steel baking pan or a gorilla pan with duct tape would solve a problem that we didn't realize we could have picked something like that up. Thank you, Jim. Again, this is installing something on a vehicle that is not our property. It's the Ritter-Cross property. Okay, back to Ned.
Okay. I assume that we've beat that up enough. Jim, I think you said you had a question. K2ZO, NS2K, or K2BAR?
No, it's not I with a question.
I had a comment.
Put the Red Cross to work.
Go ahead, Bennett.
Yeah, I was done beating that last subject. Just for Tony, your car, the front and rear seats sockets, the front seat is a dash and the back seat is that center console facing the back. That's a single 15-amp fuse, and there's a separate 15-amp fuse for the socket in your rear cargo area. And that fuse is in the rear cargo area as well. So they're both 15-amp fuses. Back to net, KO2, okay.
KO2, okay. Richard.
Everybody's talking about these fuses, and you're missing the essential point. What is a fuse? What is the wiring gauge? The fuse is a safety device that for a very short temporary time with a fast flow or slow blow is going to absorb that kind of amperage in a spike, and then it's going to blow. Most of our radios operate right at that peak. The wiring is not capable of carrying that. A 2 to 3 minute transmission is going to start heating the wires up. Then you let go. You listen for a while. Maybe you drive on to the next location. You've already heated the wires up. Now you start transmitting again. My whole goal is to keep the Fort Lee Fire Department or any other fire department out of my driveway at night. I don't need suddenly somebody tell me to roll my window down and do they know and ask me, do I know that my car is smoking like crazy? And I pull over and find out I'm on fire. Because the wiring cannot take the amperage, continuous amperage, of a 2 minute transmission here, a 3 minute transmission here, a 4 minute transmission here. The fuse is only a safety device for a temporary amperage draw that may get up that high. The wiring is what can't take that usage of 2 minutes here, 3 minutes here, 2 minutes here. That is what's going to cause your car to burst into flames.
What's the purpose of a fuse if it's not rated for the wiring? I think there's some disconnect here.
It's a very temporary safety device. You get up to 15 amps. That doesn't mean you can operate at 15 amps continuous or even for a period of time. But if you get up to 15 amps to 14 amps for a second or two and drop down, because of a voltage spike or something, the fuse is not your protection of everything. You have to take into effect the wiring that electrical current is coming over as well.
Okay, I think we've beat it enough tonight. I'm not proposing that Tony run a radio at 15 amps continuously. I don't think anybody is, but he was looking for information on capacity, and just went through his instruction book. With that, back to Ned, KO2, okay.
Thank you all. I think it's dead. I hope it's dead. Okay, KC2VRY, okay, you're coming up, you're confident, you're ready to go. KC2BRY, K2BAR.
Did you say I was confident?
I hope confident. Competent would be good as well.
Competent, maybe. Confident, no.
Okay, I assume you've gone through the questions. You've taken the test online or on your computer a good number of times, and you pretty much consistently pass now.
I passed one the other night at Tech Night, and tonight I got a 69.5.
Okay, so go through the questions and the correct answers a few more times, and you'll pick up enough more. When do you take the test?
I think I would have passed that test online tonight, but there was two questions with asking about the schematic. But where do you see the schematic? You know, which symbol is the battery or with the transformer? But they gave you no schematic to look at, so you had to take a guess.
Well, that's almost like cheating. So it sounds like you're ready. You know what a battery looks like. You know what a capacitor looks like. You know what this other stuff looks like on a schematic diagram, right?
I can read schematics, but there was no. They didn't give it to you on a computer here.
You'd use a different test site. One that gives you good questions with good answers that you can answer and really gauge how well you're doing. I wouldn't use whatever test site you're using where they're giving you questions that don't give you all the info to answer it.
Sure, which site was it that gave you this interesting dilemma?
I was on the QRZ site. And the ones from the book, I copied the questions out of the book, and I've been studying them over and over again, the one out of the Gordon West book. There they show you the schematics, so you can look at them and, you know what the symbols are. So, but they weren't online for the test.
KF2ID. When you get the test, there will be the symbols will be shown. They're not going to ask you what a capacitor looks like without showing you the capacitor. That's just QRZ was just merely telling you this is the type of question you're going to get. And then you go ahead, you know, we'll tell you the capacitors and so forth. But the test itself is going to have, if you're going to answer that question, they'll have a picture of it. KF2ID.
Oh, that's just enough. I got a 69.5 without having the schematic in front of me, so.
Yeah, I think you'll do just fine. One of the things that happened when I took my extra test a few years ago is like the third question, I have no idea why or how, I just didn't know the question at all, and it was something that I didn't happen to know. And I started to freak out, and fortunately, I was able to let it go on to the next question, and pretty quick, I was through the whole thing, and it's like, okay. So I went back, and that one, and one or two others that I wasn't 100% confident in, went through that, and I don't know what I got, one or two wrong, or something like that, but If I hadn't been able to let go and relax after running up against that roadblock early on, I'd have been in trouble. But so I suppose the key is relax, take it easy, know that you know, read the questions carefully, because if you assume you know what they mean, it probably doesn't mean exactly what you think it means unless you read it carefully. But again, you've been taking the test along, and you know what those questions are, and you know how they, they oftentimes will ask a question different from what it would seem that they're asking. So I think you're in good shape. I'm sure you can do it.
Okay. Well, we'll know about this time tomorrow night.
Do not leave a question blank. Always answer a question, even if you a simple guess, because there are four possible answers I think it is, and one is the right answer. That means if you know exactly nothing, you've got one chance of four of getting it right. So never leave a question blank, because you might just be lucky enough to guess the right answer.
All right, we'll see what happens.
That's actually very good advice. Yeah, what I did is I left it blank going through the first time, and then I went through anything that was blank or I had written in a non-confident manner, and rechecked those yet again. But yeah, you can almost certainly dismiss two of the answers right off. So you have about a 50-50 chance of getting the right, even if you don't have any idea at all, you know, what the exact answer is. Hopefully we got you pumped up here a little bit, and you'll get some good rest tonight and be ready for it tomorrow evening.
We'll see. Thanks for your confidence.
Who am I?
Bad Tony.
Take Jim's advice, carefully read the answers, and invariably you'll find that probably two of the answers are off the wall. They don't have any relationship to the true answer. And you can usually recognize that if you read each answer individually. So then you've got your chances narrowed down to two possible answers, and of those two, you have a 50-50 chance of picking the right one. But I invariably found on most of the tests that of the four answers that were given, two answers were completely off the wall and would not be recognized at all as anywhere near the answer. So, you know, don't be afraid to play the answer game. You don't have to know everything. You know, people who take tests, a lot of people don't know the material, but they know how to play the game. So, and don't be afraid to review it and take your time on it. There's no rush on it. It's your speed. The examiners will wait for you to finish. Back to net.
I was being asked, and of course there are always the ones where all of the above are correct. I don't remember what the percentage is of all the above, but it's a fairly good percentage of the ones that have that as answer D. But certainly not all of them by any chance. Anyway, you've gone through it. You know it. You know them, and you're going to do just fine.
Well, thank you.
Okay, Ben, KF2ID. I think you had a comment.
No, I think I gave all the comments. I gave my comments. It was about the antenna on the fiberglass window. The only other comment I have is I just picked up my automobile handbook, and cigarette lighters is used for 20 amps, and most of the others are down around 5. I think the back door windshield wiper, but it's a 10-year-old car, but the back door windshield wipers, I think, had the highest current rating, was a 30 amp fuse. So if you're going to, and unfortunately it does have an accessory plug, but no listing of what the fuse for that thing is. It's KF2ID.
Yeah, and to Richard's comment that just because it's a 20-amp fuse doesn't mean you're going to be able to draw 20 amps. Well, just like in your house, just because you have a 15 or 20-amp circuit breaker doesn't mean you want to run anywhere near the top of that. If you're more than about half or two-thirds, you're pushing your luck. At work, we end up with a situation that's even stranger again, where we have a lot of equipment that has double power cords. So you have to assume that all of the current is being drawn from one circuit. You know, in case the other circuit in a rack goes down. So at that point, you can't even approach 50% want for upcoming testing and maybe something else?
Okay, K2BIR and the net W2JEK, just announcing that we will be having a test session tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at the Westwood Regional High School. And if you're coming for a test and you have a license, bring your license and a copy of your license. $15 is a test fee, and you'll need some ID, like a photo driver's license or passport, or two forms of non-photo ID. And I've been having a number of people have gotten in touch with me about the test session, so I think we should be fairly busy. So we'll keep my fingers crossed. Speaking of power and whatnot, during the storm I lost my power on Saturday evening around 8 o'clock. Didn't get it back until Tuesday afternoon. So, the email that was in my computer isn't picked up until then. Red Cross business, been busy trying to catch up on a lot of things here. So hopefully everybody's antenna stayed up. I think George Schomburg, K2YLH, did lose his HF antennas as the tree went down. So I hope not too many other people lost anything. With that, back to net, W2JEK.
Thank you, Don. NS2K is K2BAR. And Rachel, did you have any further comments? EJ4WD, are you still with us, or have you escaped for the evening? I guess the non-answer is the latter. Okay, very good. Any other comments or questions for the evening? Yeah, I know we've gone over the hour here. This is good. Anyway, I hope everyone had a good time. I know I did. And wish Gordon's wife another happy one. And his son came home anyway late from work, so the celebration was delayed to the point where it impinged on these other activities. Anyway, wish to thank the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for use of the repeater, and thank all the participants. Who have we got here? Gordon, Tony, Jim, Z-O, Jim, DSL, David, Tom, KC2BRY, KC2PYB, KF2ID, KO2OK, W2JEK, myself, and AJ4WD. Thank you all, and have a good evening. And actually, I won't see you at Fairlawn tomorrow night. I'll be in Texas, but we'll see you a good bunch at Kit Night this coming Tuesday. So have a good one. This is NS2K saying good night.